the government and the corporate environment so desperately want us to centralize so they can have total surveillance and they can have backdoors into everybody's stuff. And we say it's a security vulnerability. You can't have safe backdoors. There's no such thing. You know, surveillance is a huge security problem. You don't understand the level of secondary and tertiary consequences that are going to come from this. And it's fine, and it's fine, and it's fine. And, it's just like, sure, they're abusive and everything, but not everything's imploded. Not everything's imploded yet. And that continues on, but we continue in this trajectory until at some point, some little thing breaks or somebody actually makes a concerted effort to land an attack. And it's just because it's so clear that we are so vulnerable and we realize that we have committed suicide. We have set up all of the tools and all of the environment necessary for someone else to absolutely obliterate us. And we did it because we just wanted to spy on everybody's $600 transactions.
What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And this show is brought to you by CoinKite and the Cold Card hardware wallet. This is simply the way to protect your Bitcoin, is to get yourself a good hardware wallet like the Cold Card and withdraw your coins from an exchange. Always have been a huge fan of CoinKite and their products, and I really appreciate that they support my work as well. So shout out to them, and shout out to all the Audionauts and everybody who boosts and comments on Fountains, on the Fountain app. You guys help make this show possible. And we have got a really fun one today. This one is with Daniel Prince, host of the Once Bitten podcast, and a good friend, and we had not caught up in a very long time. And we had a really awesome conversation. A lot of it was catching up on a bunch of the different things that we had both been digging into. So it's a pretty wide-ranging conversation. We cover Bitcoin, we cover AI, we cover the macro situation and the debt bubble. And we also cover a number of things just on framing and how to think about your life, how to refocus and value what's right in front of us. And also a little insight to see where it is that we're going. So really, really awesome conversation. And I thought I would share it to you here. Prince was kind enough to let me post it on my feed as well. So this is my chat with Daniel Prince from the Once Bitten podcast.
Guy, we made it. We made it happen.
We made it. We made it. I'll tell you, almost, I came like really close to having to postpone again, and like last sometime in the middle of the day yesterday, I was talking, messaging back and forth with my contractor for the stuff that we're trying to do downstairs in the basement to get studio and everything finished out, and I've just had this all just hacked together downstairs with clamps and stuffed on rafters and that sort of thing, and he told me yesterday, it's like, okay, I finally found the plumber, because one of the things we have to do is we have to lift off all the plumbing downstairs. He's like, we found the plumber and he can actually get started tomorrow. And the basement is just filled with stuff and my whole studio was set up down there. And I was like, oh my God, I have to move everything like right now. Like I have to shut this whole thing down. And literally last night I shut down everything. I'm actually up in the extra room upstairs. While Rad was sleeping and the whole house was silent, I'm carrying my desk, like slowly squeezing it through the door, make sure it doesn't ding anything. And I get my Linux machine up here, all my nodes down. I couldn't zap anybody this morning on a Noster. I tried like three times and it was like, oh crap, that's right, my start nine's down. but yeah, we're set up. It's a little hacky. You can't tell the green screen. My oversized bookcase looks good.
Yeah, oversized bookcase back there. Yeah, I mean, it's very, I think it's pertinent to Lauren's first question. And I don't even know if you, because when you came on the show before, this was very, very early. I am maybe within the first 10 shows. I'm not sure you ever got asked this question by Lauren before.
Probably not. I don't think so.
All right, Lauren, do your worst. This is the guy's
one. Do my worst. Do your worst. There you go.
Well, I have two questions, so I guess this is making up for the first time. Right. What's the hardest thing to learn about Bitcoin?
That's a good question. I would say there's an element of the technical that is like kind of the nuance between the difficulty adjustment and the mining and all of that stuff. And I think a lot of people get focused or end up hyper-focusing on what technically how Bitcoin works. But I think the hardest thing is it's not because it's hard to understand. It's because people have to unlearn kind of what they think about money and the world today is understanding that sound money is natural and that it's actually like intuitively the most obviously prosperous way to actually have a money. But we've been so aggressively kind of propagandized or just set, like the default has always been government money. And I think that's the hardest mental shift for people to make. It's a lot easier for somebody who's younger, who doesn't have like a lot of preconceived notions or a foundation of like, it definitely has to work this way. But somebody who's like 40, 50, 60 years old, who's just like, this is how money has always been. It's like alien technology. It just like, no, of course, money must be run by the state and you have to counterfeit X amount every year because counterfeiting is good if some particular person does it. I think by far that's the hardest mental shift. But just from a pure difficulty standpoint, I would say the understanding the technology and like what a protocol is, how all those interactions work, that's probably the most like technical, like detail oriented difficult thing to grasp about it.
Second question is, my dad told me you read more Bitcoin books than anyone else. Is that
I'm the guy who's read more about Bitcoin than anybody else, you know.
There you go. There's the tagline. It's true.
Oh, is that the question?
Yes,
it's true. No, yeah. I have a proof of work. I've got 1,200 episodes of the show now. Most are reads. They are articles and audio of research papers and stuff. And then I have 15 or 16 audio books about Bitcoin. And so that's just the stuff that I've literally sat down and I've recorded into the microphone and then published. So what I've just specifically read is probably 2 to 3 times as large as that set of information. So it's a lot. You know, they say there's that, I can't remember who it was who said that if you want to become a master of any topic or anything, it's 10,000 hours, right? It's do 10,000 hours of that thing. Do what?
Was it Malcolm Gladwell and The Outliers? Was that where?
I didn't know if that was originally his or if he was referring to somebody else. But yes, it is in Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers. Thank you for that. That's where I heard it, definitely. But whether it's his or not, I'm working on that 10,000 hours. I might be close. I don't know.
Oh, for sure. Like, how many episodes have you released?
Like 1,200.
All right. So if each one's,
That's probably 1,200 hours. Yeah. I mean, if you want to call it like the reading itself, that's probably on the order of 2,500 hours, like actually doing the reading. But like I might be at I could still potentially be in the 7, like, you know, we're talking thousands of hours here. You know, I could be in the 7,000 to 8,000 range. I might not hit 10,000 yet. We'll see. I don't know. I'll do some back of the napkin math and double check on that one.
Well, do you count the not specific Bitcoin books as well, right? All of the Austrian stuff that you've read, which I would argue
those are Bitcoin books. Yeah, I consider those Bitcoin books. So yeah. That's a good point. I actually did that for 10 years before Bitcoin, you know, like I was reading through all that stuff, but those are critical Bitcoin critical topics, honestly. So yeah.
All right.
Dude,
okay,
what I'm trying to get through right now. Look at this beast.
Oh my goodness.
This thing is
what is this?
This thing is a this is ridiculous. It's called the Code Breakers. Comprehensive history of secret communication from ancient times to the internet. It is just from the very first concept of a cipher to my it is literally the most I don't know anything else that is as thorough as this one. I've been
How many
very
pages?
slowly going through this book. This one's like 1500 or something like that. What is this? Oh, whoops, it's upside down. I put the cover back on wrong.
You're gonna do the audio book for this
1200. It's about 1200 pages.
Is this,
but
are you gonna
slowly
do the audio
but
book guy?
I have been recording it while I go through it. I haven't talked to David Kahn. I haven't talked to the author or whatever, but I'm probably just gonna reach out and be like, hey, I got an audiobook. But I found when I digest something that I really want to know, I go through much more slowly and much more deliberately. Like I don't go through like three paragraphs. It's very easy to read something quickly and then just kind of like I'm reading it, but I'm still a little bit like lost in my head or like stepped away from it for like three paragraphs. I'm like, wait, what did I just read?
Mm-hmm.
But if I have to record it and I really, really want to know it, recording it is how to really know it. So I was just like, all right, well, I'll do both at the same time. And maybe we can publish this audiobook for other people too. Cause that is it's actually a good book too. You know, you think of it like that's going to be a textbook. He actually tells it very story-like. For kind of the episodes in history where cryptography was like a critical piece of the puzzle and how it was. So like it opens up in World War II and talking about Enigma and the first time that, you know, they were doing cryptographic communications and why the ability to, even before the Enigma machine, our ability to protect our communication between Hawaii and Washington. And how specifically how quickly, and which wasn't very quickly, but how quickly we were able to get communication to them and then get a response back as to what to do, bunch of different things. Like it's really, really entertaining, despite seemingly being a $1,200 treatise on a technical topic.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you, Lauren, for your questions.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Appreciate it.
Well, have a good day I know what it is. All right, bye.
Yeah, it's day for him because it's morning over there.
Yes, it's just day for me. Thank you. Will do.
All right, brother. What's been going on? What's on your radar? What's been keeping you busy? Other than, you know, churning out your basement and reading 1,200 page books. You always got something going on.
Yeah, man, I've been working on so many different projects. Recently have started the Pair Report, which is another show. And for back end reasons, I am actually going to be switching the Bitcoin Audible feed to the Guy Swan Network, and I'm just going to put all the shows in one feed, and then still have them separate for anybody who just wants to listen to AI, just wants to listen to the Pair Report stuff. But holy crap, my back end is just getting so many different places and things to publish now. And I'm just like, I've got to figure out how to like take these 20 things and turn them into like four or five, because that would really make me really simplify things. So I'm working on that. That's just been kind of slowly day to day. But I'm loving the Pair Report. I'm so stoked about what's going on with the Pair Stack and Noster. And that's really kind of what the focus of the show is where and what decentralized protocols do I think are going to be the thing that I think we're going to fundamentally change the infrastructure of the web. I really think we are slowly but surely moving in that direction. And I think Bitcoin and Lightning are really kind of the missing piece that are allowing us to do that. Because I don't think people respect enough or recognize enough that one of the reasons we ended up with centralized platforms everywhere was actually spam. We did not know how to deal with a entirely, like, this is really what killed Usenet. And we had a bunch of very decentralized tools and a kind of like original foundations for the internet. And when it was a small community, it worked really, really well. But as soon as it grew to a size that people were just flooding it with crap and spamming and all this, and we had no solutions back then, that's when all the, I mean, if you look through cyberpunk history, so much of it is just, how do you deal with this? You know, hash cash. How do you deal with, this is where the idea of proof of work came from, like what to do with it. It's like, okay, well, how do we deal with spam in an open system? And what's funny is that now that we have solved that, Bitcoin has essentially solved that from a monetary perspective. It allows us to put monetary stake into things and to explicitly tie monetary value to communications and to literally a packet of information. And I think that is going to be a critical piece of the puzzle on top of just in general, a web of trust, which also requires open identity, which is also something we did not have, which is, you know, part of the reason spam is a problem, because you can't weight your information based on who you know you trust. In solving those two major problems, I think we are headed back to kind of the glory days of 2004, 2005, where the idea of peer-to-peer traffic and peer-to-peer networks was kind of like, that was most of the internet. Most of the traffic on the internet was peer-to-peer. And we rushed away from that. But I think we're looping back around and headed back there. And I think it's mostly because of Bitcoin and Lightning makes these protocols actually sustainable. And there are new models that just have to happen. And at the same time, that's another reason why I'm fascinated with AI, is because I think it's one of the most important factors that's forcing that shift. Because I think all the platforms are going to silo, like, aggressively. And they have been for, like, the last few years. Like, Twitter's attempt to crack down on the bots. You'll notice, like, all the websites and stuff that were open and that you could just go visit, you increasingly can't do that anymore. Like, I can't do much of anything on Reddit without an account and without actually logging in. YouTube just started doing this. I just saw this post on Nostra the other day was it Vitter? No, it wasn't. I don't know. Somebody posted that YouTube, Google, is aggressively banning IP addresses for people who are just viewing YouTube. And increasingly, you might not be able to scrape information or some apps and stuff that are like, oh, yeah, just download this, like Cascader. Actually, I was just using Cascader yesterday or the day before or something, and suddenly their summarized YouTube videos, which I use on occasion, and also use their Cascader Vision, which lets you make clips from YouTube videos based on the transcript. It's a little AI tool set. I was using that, and suddenly it was all throwing back errors because they couldn't connect to YouTube anymore. And I messaged the guy, and he was like, yeah, we're trying to figure it out on the back end. But I think we're going to be to a place in not very long where if you're not signed into a YouTube account or a Google account, you can't look at YouTube. Like, in an era where you can have a million fake people, a million fake faces, a million fake voices and fake everything, I think you have to have a web of trust or you don't have an open internet. I think the idea of an open network is kind of coming, is being threatened right now. And we're gradually closing the doors and putting up walls everywhere. But luckily, I think the pieces of the puzzle, I think AI is actually a good piece, even though it's one of the biggest factors that's just causing problems. I think it's also going to be one of the biggest factors to the solution. And but in addition, I really think it's the decentralized protocols in combination with Bitcoin Lightning that are going to solve this problem. So I started the Pair Report to be like, right, we're going down this rabbit hole. I've been so focused on like Keat and Wholesale and a bunch of these things, and then Nostr as well. And I wanted a place to just talk about that because I felt it was a separate discussion from Bitcoin specifically.
But here we are, Guy.
Yeah, here we are, man.
Cyber attack day one.
Are all your computers down too? Are you a Windows guy?
Yeah, no, I'm not a Windows guy. I'm an Apple guy. So we're all fine personally in house, but across Europe here today at time of recording, a shit ton of flights have been grounded. You know, the general disruption is reigning writ large. What are your thoughts on this? Because as Bitcoiners, we know this narrative has been bubbling up in the background at least for 3 years. And many people have been calling, right, this will be the next thing. You know, mixed uppercase and lowercase tweets like cyber attack is coming. Yeah, what are your thoughts on that? And then we'll get on to like the political pantomime that is currently playing out in your neck of the woods as well.
So it's hard to say whether or not this is a deliberate attack. Just from the rough reports as to what is supposedly causing it, that it was a driver update error and it just causes Windows to crash. And the really bad problem is that you can't automatically update this issue because the driver literally will not let it. Like, it's just going to be in a crash cycle. And so you have to manually update the driver to fix this. So I think the recovery from this is going to be really slow. Or at least unless somebody comes up with a really clever solution, I think it's bound to be really slow. But whether or not it's a cyber attack, I think it shows the incredible degree of vulnerability and how sensitive we are to this sort of thing. Because this was one Windows update pushed and it shut down so much. And you know, I was giving my brother crap. He was driven to Canada yesterday. He was all day driving. I think it was like 15 hours or something like that. And I was just like, dude, why are you driving? Just fly. And now I'm like, maybe that was any other time, like I would have been proven right that he got stopped at the border and searched because he's a Bitcoiner and he's a bald and 40 dude by himself, and he got searched, so his whole car got torn apart and he was calling people to make sure that his story was the same as other people's that he said, because he was going to go visit somebody. Absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, I don't know. There was a hint of wisdom in that as well, because he's not stuck because he can just drive. But who knows how long he can take to sort out all the flights when airports have been grounded essentially globally, like all over the place. Like, that's insane. That is so insane. The degree of reliance of just kind of like third party. Like, that is a central point of failure, you know? Like, that's a massive trusted third parties are security holes, guys. You shouldn't just update every update. Turn off automatic updates and do it slowly as you need to. Plan your updates. Update at the end of the day when you're shutting down. But, yeah, it's a thing. Whether or not it's a cyber attack, I don't know. I mean, let's say it's China. Let's just pull a potential adversary out of our butt and toss some guilt at them. if it's China or whatever, Putin, I don't think it would be difficult to, I have no doubt that any intelligence agency that seeks to have some sort of influence or admin ish level access in a huge company like Microsoft or whatever, I think they probably all have a play, they all have a hand or some sort of a connection into that. How do you have 20,000 employees and you can't vet that from like a national security standpoint? No, you've got some, and I think it was China specifically. The number of people that, and you think about it from the CIA perspective too, just using the CIA as our own model here, is they had like 2.1 $1 trillion that was just like unaccounted for. Like, that's probably people. That's probably people on their payroll. I mean, who knows where all that money goes? And if you want to hire, and you know, you're paying people $100,000, $2.1 trillion is 2.1 million people. Like, you got somebody in every company that exists, and then you've got seven people left over to go ahead and put in another in all of those companies. Like, that's an absolutely staggering amount of money. And as I at least heard from somebody, I can't remember if this was like something to do with WikiLeaks or wherever, like what the source was, but that the CCP does this pretty much globally, is they have people work for the party, and their job is to go overseas, get a visa, get a work visa, go work for tech companies in Africa, in the US, in Canada, like everywhere. They go everywhere and they infiltrate and they report back, and when they're needed, they take their marching orders. So yeah, this could be on purpose. This absolutely could be on purpose. And if it is on purpose, I think it's an incredible flex in the sense of, look how vulnerable you are to something so simple. What if this was a concerted effort? Like, what if this was a very deliberate and we had a lot of motivation to do this? How much problem, like, how quickly could you ground every plane? How quickly could you shut off power in how many different places? You know, I don't think our infrastructure is not robust. You know, it is not fail safe. And so it should be, whether or not it's any form of attack, and I kind of don't think so. I think it's just general third-party vulnerabilities and Microsoft problems. But if it was an attack, it should still scare the absolute crap out of us, you know? Because somebody who is, I mean, excuse me, even if it isn't an attack, it should still scare the absolute crap out of us, because somebody who is dedicated and wants to attack us, I think, is just showing the absolute insane scale of damage and problems they can cause. And I don't think we're even slightly prepared for it. Like, we, but this is, these are the consequences. This is the consequences of everybody being on a centralized platform, of our communication layers being centralized. Like, you know, the government and the corporate environment so desperately want us to centralize so they can have total surveillance and they can have backdoors into everybody's stuff. And we say, you know, it's a security vulnerability. You can't have safe backdoors. There's no such thing. You know, surveillance is a huge security problem. You don't understand the level of secondary and tertiary consequences that are going to come from this. And it's fine, and it's fine, and it's fine. And, you know, it's just like, sure, they're abusive and everything, but not everything's imploded. Not everything's imploded yet. And that continues on. But we continue in this trajectory until at some point, some little thing breaks, or somebody actually makes a concerted effort to land an attack. And it's just because it's so clear that we are so vulnerable, and we realize that we have committed suicide. Like, we have set up all of the tools and all of the environment necessary for someone else to absolutely obliterate us. And we did it because we just wanted to spy on everybody's $600 transactions. And it's insane. It's insane. It's so thoughtless. It's so short-term thinking. It's so unbelievably stupid and reckless. But we've done it. That's our infrastructure. Luckily, Bitcoin is the only thing that thinks about, like, oh, well, what if a government would just like try to shut down half the nodes? Well, how do we make sure it stays alive? I mean, I don't even know what else to compare to. Like, Bitcoin's one of the most robust networks in the world, because it's the only thing that is designed and explicitly thinking about failure modes. So it's a mess. It's a mess, regardless of what you're thinking about it, or what, how do you think it occurred, you know?
The most important thing that you can do in order to secure your Bitcoin and know that you own it is to take it off the exchange to withdraw it and use a reliable, secure hardware wallet. This is the Cold Card hardware wallet made by CoinKite. This device can be entirely air-gapped from start to finish. CoinKite has designed everything about this device to be as secure as possible, even in those edge case scenarios. And there's so many additional features like the BrickMe pin, the dummy pin, and even all the features you need for complex multi-sig and to use multiple wallets and devices together. But if you don't want any of that complication or any of those advanced features, you don't need to use any of it. And you can just use the Cold Card to keep your keys safe and know that your Bitcoin is secure. And the thing I love most about this is that I can enable NFC and I can just tap to pay. I set up my transaction and my wallet on this phone. And then whenever I want to send anything, all I have to do is tap, send the transaction to my Cold Card. I sign it and then I tap, send it back and broadcast. That's it. I'm able to get hardware wallet security for my phone. If you haven't gotten a Cold Card yet or checked out the Cold Card Q, their new device with a larger screen that can communicate by QR code and has an entire QWERTY keyboard on it, you definitely need to. The details will all be right in the show notes as well as my discount code, Bitcoin Audible. Protect your keys and get yourself a Cold Card.
And as for what you were saying about people being placed, in companies and political parties or whatever else, have you ever seen the interview with Yuri Bezmenov, the Russian guy that really blew the whistle back in the 60s, I think it was? He was talking about this explicitly. This is what happens. This is how they do it. This is
Yes. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yuri, I recognize the name, but I wasn't placing it. But yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
If you go back and look at that clip, you'll recognize actually a very young Edward Griffin is the interviewer.
Really?
Jekyll Island, dude. Yep.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm going to have to mark that down and go back and revisit that. That's crazy.
When you see it, it's like, wait a minute. Who's that kid? Holy shit. That's Griffin. Like, that's amazing. It's really worth going back for anybody that's not seen that clip. I'll try and put the clip in the show notes. Like I said, a 45-minute interview. He just lays it all out, how they do it. Like, it's amazing and how they infiltrate. And, you'll be not surprised to know that he wound up dead not soon after that, I don't think.
Yep.
Usual playbook. Talking of which, the usual playbook. You've had an assassination attempt over there in the US of A, where we wake up some mornings and we just honestly, mate, like, you're like, wow. Like, you know, whatever next.
I'm so glad he wasn't. Like, I'm not a Trump supporter. I'm probably not going to vote for anybody. I haven't in a long time, not since Ron Paul in the primaries. But I'm so glad he was not killed. And I watched the video of, you know, how he's like turned to the side and then he turns his head like this, like right before the first shot. And there were like two shots, like right back to back that actually land. And you can tell that he reacts before you even hear the sound, like, because he felt it, you know, like he's feeling the whizzing by his head and then his ear gets hit. But had he not done that last little move, like they show, like it would have taken off the back of his head just because of the angle of his skull. Like it would have still hit him in the ear at the same location, but it would have done so at an angle towards his head rather than just straight along the side of his head. So crazy enough, it was actually, it would have, had he not turned his head, it would have been probably a killing shot. And I think it just goes to show how like the rhetoric of the corporate media has just been like, of course this was where they were going to push people to. People are literally lunatics about this. Like I don't support Trump, but I find myself having to defend him all the time because there are people who are just absolutely batshit crazy, excuse my language, but like just absolutely bonkers about the reality of what he even is and what any of this political situation is. Like, I had someone or somebody on Noster the other day, and in a response to something, who was saying, well, when he literally wants to kill you and kill me, and he's trying to murder millions of people, that he will literally be Stalin. I mean, like, 100% believe this, and went on this like crazy tirade. And I was just like, you gotta have a reality check, man. What are you talking about? And the media pushes this. Like, they're explicit about, like, there's no ambiguity that they've been saying about the way that they've been positioning this. And like, without a doubt, like, of course somebody was going to go insane and try this. Like, it's the end result of exactly what they've been saying for all this time. You know, if we used any measure of attempt at being like principled or taking whatever the corporate media's principles are for like the culpability of let's use Trump as the example of the culpability of Trump for being like, we're gonna make sure this election is right, and we're gonna fight or something. He says that in a speech, right? And then that's when they go to the Capitol building, and the protest, they get in the doors, and the protest goes inside, and everybody's, you know, cheering and yelling, and Jane 6 happens, and it's the end of the world. Oh my God, democracy's dead. But they claim that this is him, like he gave them marching orders, and that he's culpable because of what he said, because the protest ended up in the Capitol building. Okay, so if that amount of guilt, if just saying that makes him guilty of that, how many times does MSNBC have to say he's literally Hitler, he's literally trying to kill millions of people, he is literally going to become a dictator day one, and this is the end of democracy, this is the end of our constitution, and he explicitly wants to do this? How are they not culpable? If we even tried to use like a 1% application of their nonsense principles, which don't really exist, they would be 1,000% guilty of this assassination attempt, because they are the ones, they have spread the most absolute absurd lies. And again, I say this as someone, I'm not trying to defend Trump, but Trump is not going to put people in concentration camps. He's not, he has nothing against, like, literally, like, a trans person spoke to me and said, he's literally trying to kill me, he's going to murder me. He's like, he has nothing, he has no plan, no nothing about anything about trans people that is going to hurt anybody. It doesn't, he, the only thing that he has ever come out against is cutting children's, like, prepubescent people's testicles off. Like, you know, like, that's the only thing he's ever shown any sort of thing of, yeah, maybe we shouldn't do that. And, you know, it seems pretty reasonable to not cut off body parts of people if you're not even allowed to tattoo yourself before you're 18. I don't see that as being crazy. That doesn't seem crazy to me. You're gonna have to work really, really hard to try to make me think that's murdering people. But holy crap, the collective psychosis of the political environment that I have to defend that guy. Who, and he's retarded, he's an idiot, but it's exhausting. It's exhausting. Everybody has lost their touch on reality.
Nobody realizes that they're just being played. They just don't realize it. They're just watching great big theatrical, you know. It's just incredible. I mean, this aside, this obviously, I think, is a very unique event.
Yeah,
goodness knows. I mean, you know, the theory is all out there. I think it's too early just to start reeling off what could have happened, what might have happened. I mean, the first one, you know, people were like, oh, this is a staged event just to get him, you know. I mean, I think we can clearly throw that one out the window. Now, you've seen the footage slowed down of the bullet ripping through his ear. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to take a flyer and write, okay, I'm going to say this just at this point, then you, that's your cue. You just take a little bit off my ear. We're all good and we'll get 1,000 more votes. Like, come on.
That's absolutely bonkers. If, anything that you, anybody who knows anything about Trump, if you have even a slightly realistic understanding of who that guy is, that guy is so arrogant and he is so full of himself. He would never in a million years let someone shoot him. And here's shoot at him, even slightly. And of course, oh, we're going to just like casually kill a couple of innocent people in the audience to, you know, to make it seem real. And then at the exact same time is the problem. Like the reason you would do something like that is because you're falling by, like, let's say someone is literally that psycho and that bonkers. You would do that if you were behind. You would do that if you were in a desperate attempt. You thought that there was no chance that you were ever going to be president again, that you were literally up against Hitler and the country and freedom and everything. Democracy was doomed. And you thought, like, I think it makes a whole lot more sense for Biden to have a fake assassination attempt because everybody knows Biden was going to lose. And Trump was actually ahead. He had, that's somebody looking for attention. If you do, you would never ever risk that if you were ahead. And Trump has no problem getting any attention that he wants ever. They give him 10 times the attention as he deserves about every little thing that he says. Like, he had no reason, absolutely no reason. And then, of course, his reaction is perfectly genuine. Like, he's just like, oh, what was that? And he's like, oh. And then he hears the shots and he's like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And then he just like gets down. Like, that would not be, if he was prepared, if this was like an actual thing that he was like preparing for, he wouldn't have that what the hell is going on look and think that, you know, his first reaction is like, did I just get like bitten in the ear or something? You know, he didn't jump down on the ground. Like, it would be, it just seemed like a extremely genuine, like, I don't know what's happening. And he's trying to make an assessment because it took like 3 shots or something for him to recognize that, like, oh my God, I'm being shot at. I think this was just a bullet that went by my head and then he got down. But in the context of whether or not it was on purpose in the sense of people did not stop it, even though it was clear something was happening, or if it's just pure incompetence, that's a different, that's a much longer conversation, I think. But I will say from what I've, the cursory kind of glance at all the pieces of the puzzle, like, I've tried to take like 30 or 40 minutes every day to just be like, all right, let me go down this rabbit hole again and see what I can find. And there's a bunch of things people are saying. People are saying it's not Thomas Crooks. And I was pretty skeptical myself at the beginning because the picture they gave of him and then the picture of the dead shooter on the roof, they didn't really look similar. But I think it was literally just because they've been passing around like a middle school picture of the guy. Like, it's like a really young, like, student photo. And I was just like, does nobody have a more recent picture? And then I found one, which I still haven't totally confirmed, but it does look like the perfect mix between the dead guy and the middle school picture. And specifically, it looks like the middle school dude has long hair and he's older. And it's a picture that was cropped from a different image that apparently caught him randomly on the day of, out and about, it seems like. So again, not quite confirmed, but increasingly, at least that picture definitely looked more like the shooter than I had suspected. And then there's also another picture at a really long distance, and you can tell he's actually wearing glasses, which that was another thing, is like, where's the guy's glasses? But regardless, in kind of like going down this rabbit hole just for a little bit every day until I'm like, I'm so sick of this, I gotta get back to work and do something Bitcoin insane. I'm increasingly just think it's incompetence. Like, I just think everybody was incompetent and nobody is taking any of this seriously. I think the Secret Service is just very complacent and And maybe there's some DEI hires, like everybody's making those jokes and the memes around about that. Honestly, in my vault, like kind of poor girl who's just taking the brunt of all of this. Granted, there are pictures of her like jumping down and trying to protect herself while everybody else is jumping on top of Trump. And that doesn't look good. You are the Secret Service. And also, just why the hell are you getting a, like, I don't even care. And this was like one of my wife's first reactions too. And she's like, why on earth do they have like a 5'6" little girl trying to protect a 6'4" giant? You know, Trump is huge. Have you ever seen him next to other politicians? The guy's giant. This is not the person that you put in that position. Like, I don't even care if it's a woman or not. You can probably find a linebacker lady to go up there, but that's just not the one, you know? So anyway, it would not surprise me in the least if there are plants. You know, Joe Biden is, or Joe Biden, I don't think Joe Biden competently is doing any sort of conspiracies, but the current regime and the establishment is very much kind of in charge of the Secret Service and in charge of these institutions. So if they wanted to conveniently say, it's okay if you just take 2 to 3 times as long to do anything or check stuff, or, you know what I mean? That the convenience of not doing your job to the fullest, because maybe we're not that worried if something bad happens to Trump. That could certainly be a piece of this puzzle too. I mean, that wouldn't even be slightly surprising, is incompetence on purpose, basically. But it also, it's one of those things like Ayn Rand and Atlas Shrugged. I always loved the way that she depicted the breakdown of the Soviet Union. Obviously, in the book, it's a story, but that's what she's trying to show. It's like, this is how it happened. Like, you know, we saw this. My parents saw this. I saw this. Is that everyone just becomes so dependent upon the instructions, the authority, and who is making decisions. And you create this culture of offloading responsibility to the next person and to the next person. And you essentially breed it. A culture and multiple generations of cowards and people who can't think for themselves. And malicious or not, it all starts to break down. And in an effort for people to absolve themselves of responsibility, they continue to push it down the line until everybody's pushed it to the point that literally a decision never gets made. And then there's just disasters. There's just awful consequences of that, because you cannot top down a society. Like the definition, the foundation of society is bottom up. It just is. And when you try to top it down, when you try to go top down, it slowly but surely builds up enough structural risk that when something cracks or something breaks, you've set up an environment that, for better or worse, it doesn't hold anymore. And this could be a great example of that. Incompetence 100,000% played a big part of the puzzle, whether or not at the end of the day something was malicious and very on purpose, which I wouldn't even be slightly surprised as well there.
No, absolutely not, mate. So last night he gave a talk, and it's pretty amusing, in bringing this back to Bitcoin, that Bitcoin has made its way front and center into the kind of like, it's on the ticket, right? He's now chose Vance as his vice president, who's outwardly said he owns Bitcoin. He's going to go to and speak in Nashville about Bitcoin. He's said he's now like a big proponent of Bitcoin. He's now said Jamie Dimon is changing his mind on Bitcoin. I love all the Bitcoiners. He's like, meh, whatever. Like, you know, don't care. But politicians will say anything for a vote, right? We all know that. Mm-hmm. And now last night, he gets up on stage and he starts bashing Bukele. Have you seen that clip?
No.
Oh
No,
my
I
goodness.
haven't.
You're gonna have to see this. Jack Cruz
No, I
tweeted
didn't
it out.
catch this at all. Oh,
Yeah.
man.
You gotta see, go to Jack Cruz's Twitter thread and feed, excuse me, and he tweeted it out. And it's like a 2.5 minute clip of Trump basically saying this guy claims to be clearing up his country and putting all of these criminals in jail and behind bars and turning them into nice people. That's all a bunch of lies. What's happening is that he's shipping them out across our borders into the United States. That's
Is
what he
that
said. That's exactly what he said in the address last night.
do they have a bunch of do they have a big immigration problem? Like immigration with an E from El Salvador to the US? I don't even
I don't know. That's the claim. Buchanan is
I've never
catching all the
heard that.
gang
In fact,
members.
what I've heard is they're at least seen, I guess I haven't really done strong verification on this, but their prison population has exploded and shifted massively, like
Well, did you
to the
listen
tens
to
of thousands of
Tucker?
people in the last few years for this.
Did you listen to Tucker, his interview with Tucker Carlson with Nayib Bukele?
I did not see that one.
Okay,
Oh
so
man, that's something
Bukele,
that's got to be on my list. Yeah.
yeah, Bukele, he, and weirdly enough, the topic of Bitcoin did not come up once, even though they were talking about like the economic restructuring of the country. Like, huh?
That's bonkers. I did
How
not talk
could
about
you not
that.
even ask a question about that? But
No.
anyway, whatever. And in that interview, Bukele was claiming the opposite, saying that all of the gang members were being caught and arrested in the US and shipped purposefully into El Salvador. So it seems like there's a counterclaim being made on stage last night by Donald Trump. But like the point being is like, okay, you're courting the Bitcoin vote. You're saying Bitcoin's great. You've assigned your VP. You're talking about Diamond and Bitcoin. That's brilliant. Someone's given him this advice, right? And then you get up on stage and you call out Bukele and say he's basically shipping all of his murderers and child rapists and whatever else bad dudes into the US and we're going to shut this down and he's not a nice guy. You're like, huh?
Man, honestly, I think Trump just talks out of his, just talks right out of his butt, like all the time. I think he just, I think most of the time that he gets up on stage, he's winging it. I think he's just saying what he thinks. And that's why it's so easy to catch him in saying something bonkers, is because he's just like, I wonder if you could just like spray some Clorox in there and then COVID would go away. I wonder, I think he's just like, what do you got to say? You got to say about that? And I literally think he's just like saying crap. And, probably somebody was saying that, I mean, who knows what article or somebody he talked to or some conversation he had about Bukele. And that probably came up. He's like, I bet there's a bunch of immigrants coming from that place just because, they've had such a huge shift. There's no way that he did that, just because he cracked down. That's probably where everybody's coming from across the border. We got 20,000 people a day, blah, blah, blah. Like it probably just some conversation. And then he gets up on stage and then he goes off on that for about 22 minutes. Yeah, who knows? Who knows? I really think he just wings it. He's just talking out of his butt the whole time. I
It's
mean, it's, and it's
madness.
probably something too that he has another conversation, reads another article in a week. His opinion is different on it. Who knows?
Are you going to Nashville?
I am. Are you?
No. But please tell me you're going to be the dude on the sports desk critiquing Trump's address
Oh my
because
God, I
that'd
would
be
love
so good.
to.
You got to get hold
What
of
time? What time is the Trump thing? I have no idea. I haven't looked at the schedule. All I know is that like, and I'm pretty stoked about this too, is I've got a really good panel. With Luke Roman, Mark Moss, and Dave Smith. And we're gonna be talking about government out of control. So I'm pretty stoked about that. That one is gonna be a really, really fun panel. I am on at I need to look at the schedule. B.TC? Yeah, B.TC.conference.
Just run a poll, run a Twitter poll. Should I be on the sports desk after the Donald Trump address at Nashville? And we've got your back.
That is smart. That is smart. That's the way to do it right
Get
there.
that poll out there. I would love to see you do a guy's take on Trump's address at Nashville.
Dude, that would be way too much fun. Oh, I can't even find their schedule right now. I'll look it up later because I know I'm going to be on the desk. It would be super convenient if it just so happened to be that I'm already during that time, but it's a long shot. So I'll have to make the poll.
And another thing I wanted to, you know, say thank you to were the little videos that you've been putting out, right? Guys, Two Sats. That's
very
educational. Yeah. And I get my wife and my kids and like to sit down and watch them. Part of the homeschooling curriculum, if you will. How many have you released? How many have you filmed? What can we look forward to?
I've got just four so far. And I think it's mostly like my video workflow is still very limited. And I also still have like a more of a problem with myself on camera. I'm not as comfortable. Like I can just turn on the mic now and just talk, you know, for podcasts. You know, you do that 800 times and at some point you just kind of realize you're not thinking about it at all anymore. But video is still uncomfortable. Video is still something that I spend a lot of time setting up, and I'll record like a whole thing and then I'll go back and look at it and like my hair is like awkward and I kind of look like bald and there's like an odd angle or something and be like, I have to record this whole thing over again, son of a bitch. And so that's basically where I've been. So I'm slow at getting them out. But it has gotten increasingly better, and I'm also simplifying kind of the animation stuff that I've been trying to do. In addition, is I've figured out how I'm going to do animation a lot easier, so I can do little visuals, but they won't take me as long when I need them for the explanation. But my workflow for that is actually I've gotten really good with my workflow for coming up with the shows. Is what I actually do is I start with a podcast episode. So I basically start a Guys Take episode and I say, okay, this is the idea that I'm trying to get across. And my goal is to first just on the podcast is to just rant about it for like an hour, is just get as much out of my head about this idea as I can. And then I have my little AI, the little coding app thing that I have here for like I've made tons of these little apps just with AI. It was so cool to just do like little single purpose apps. And I have one that's called Scribe Drop that I can drop any video, audio, media content or whatever on it. And then it will automatically convert it with FFmpeg and then go put it through Whisper and give me a transcript. So I have a text file on my computer. And then I do a lot of stuff with AI with the text. And so what I do is I will first go through a first run through of the transcript and start reading back through. And then I just cut. I'd be like, this is unnecessary. This is a tangent. I've repeated myself twice on this one issue. This I think is the best way that I said it. So let me get rid of these two. And I cut it down from, you know, an hour and 20 minutes to 20 minutes. And then I send it to AI. I send it to ChatGPT and I send it to Claude, and I five or six times, and I word the prompt differently every time. I ask it for the best analogy, break this down to give me a much more succinct version of this that hits the main ideas. Like, and I basically brute force like 10 or 12 different options with the two different AIs. And I pick out the things that I thought, okay, that's a really good rewording of the way I said this. And I start piecing that together. And then I keep doing that until I have like 7 minutes. And then I figure out how to cut 3 minutes out of it. And then I'm down to like a 4 or 5 minute thing that I feel like is super succinct and really gets the point across and really does it in kind of like my words and my analogy. I hone in on one particular analogy that I want to focus on. And then I've got a 5 minute video and then I start working on the video side of it. But I have like 25 of them piecing together, like that have bullet points that have a frame for a Guys Take episode that would then become that. But it's a very slow, long, slow process because trying to get something in 4 minutes that like really explains an idea is hard. It is really hard. But I'm getting better at it. I'm getting better at it. And I've talked about Bitcoin and all of this stuff long enough that I feel like I do a pretty good job at coming up with an analogy of making this make sense, you know, painting the right picture in people's minds without getting too deep into the details. But I have plenty of them planned. I have so many of them.
Damn, man. How can we get you? Here's the thing as well, right? You're a one-man band. And it's funny that we were joking about this because it's taken us so long to find a time that we can get together, sit down, have a conversation and a catch-up call. You know, I jokingly said to you on Twitter, like, you know, I'll have my people contact your people. Just be wary.
I do have Johnny. I do have a producer now. So, and that's been a godsend. And I should actually put him in charge of this. I should make him my people to go to orient this. But
People's Lauren, and you know, let's start doing the scheduling and you know the research before the guests come on. But it's difficult. And are you still juggling any kind of fiat rails at the moment with regards to working? No, you've managed to completely kick all that into touch.
I have way too much stuff to. I can't juggle anything. I can't juggle anything else. I am booked solid every single day between meetings, and I also have taken on like one of the things I've been thinking about recently is, I mean, I've kind of started too many shows. That's probably another good reason to pull this back into the Guy Swan Network, is to just kind of like think about it as one stream that I'm focusing on rather than four shows, you know? But because of that, I try to get out one piece of media content every day, and a lot of the content takes more than one day to get done. You know, so I am pretty much booked solid. Like, I would not be able to do this and do a fiat job in addition. In fact, I've thought about it and tried to, but that's just not going to work. What I'm trying to do now is I'm trying to figure out how to get my workflow streamlined enough, because I've been trying to move more and more towards side projects as my main thing. And the podcast has still always been my base. It's been the foundation that makes everything else doable. But I've been trying to get into the Two Cents videos are a great example of like the direction I'm trying to go. But I also want to just like make film, and I want to make like a lot of side projects. I want to build apps, and I am building an application right now, which obviously doesn't pay. It pays my developers, but it loses me money. But I do hope to make money back on that. And I've been talking with like a number of different people and making some investments in projects that I think are really, really important. And I've really tried to focus on problems that I'm having. What solves my problem? Because increasingly, that's what I try to spend a lot of my time doing is, all right, how can I set up my system so that it's so seamless and easy that I know I could just I could hand it off to somebody else who's not familiar with this stuff and it would just work. Mm-hmm. So when I cannot find an easy solution there, or there's not the right tool, like Phoenix Wallet was great, but now it's not really, it can't be in my workflow anymore. Like, I can still use Phoenix, right? Like, I can just use a VPN, or in fact, I don't even have to use a VPN. They haven't blocked US IP addresses. They're just not in the app store. So I can use Phoenix as much as I want still, but I've closed out all of my channels and I'm not in Phoenix anymore because I know I can't go to my hairstylist and say, download the Phoenix wallet and I'll send you some sats. And if I can't do that with my setup, well, then I'm just going to have to give them something that I'm not using every day if I'm still using Phoenix. And then I don't know what problems they're going to run into. You know, I'm not familiar with the setup anymore. And so I want my setup to be something that I can do. I can give to my hairstylist. I can give to the guy who comes and works on the plumbing downstairs because we talk 2 hours about Bitcoin and all this stuff. And he wants to do a wallet and I'll tip him, you know? So that's what I try to do is I try to build my setup and use all of the tools to see what is going to work for me in such an easy and seamless way that I know I can give it over to a normie. And even though they might not be super familiar and they might have problems with it, I know exactly what problems they're going to run into and how to solve it. So all they have to do is message me and we'll get it sorted. And where those aren't working anymore, I'm trying to invest in solutions. And so slowly but surely, and I think it's just I'm in a place where a lot of capital is being dedicated to things that are very slow to give any sort of return, whether they're just a pure solution to a problem or return from a SATS standpoint. I have booked my time solid for quite some time, probably.
This is the Swan Bitcoin app, and this is how easy it is to just buy Bitcoin whenever you're feeling like it. And I feel like it right now. And as it shows me right here, I still have $9,388 worth of my $10,000 of Bitcoin buying that has no fees whatsoever. And now I have $10 more worth of Bitcoin. I do this quite often. One of the really great things about Swan is the incredible number of resources they have for learning and understanding anything that you want to know about Bitcoin. And importantly, they're going to teach you why you should not trade. They're not going to encourage you to trade. They are Bitcoin only. If you're looking for an easy and reliable way to get into Bitcoin, if you're looking to put Bitcoin in your IRA, if you're looking to put Bitcoin in your business, if you're looking to do anything around getting on a Bitcoin standard or getting exposed to Bitcoin in your portfolio, check out swanbitcoin.com/guy is my special link, and you will find it very conveniently right in the show notes.
I want to give you a shout out as well and thank you. You've been, you know, a huge part of my journey. I remember the way I discovered you. I discovered you back in, when did you start the, it wasn't called Bitcoin Audible back then, it was called
the Cryptoconomy.
The Cryptoconomy, my God, man. Oh, such a blast from the past.
I hate that name.
Yeah, so do I.
I was going to do an April Fool's joke this year about, like, because I couldn't come up with a good name for the Guy Swan Network. I don't even really like the Guy Swan Network, honestly, but I could not, every time I tried to come up with a name for it, it just felt so frivolous. And, you know, like New Sovereignty Network or something. It's like, nobody knows what the hell that, they could be like, what are you talking about? And I was just like, whatever. People know my name.
Yeah.
Just make it the Guy Swan Network. That's all. And that's what we were calling it behind the scenes anyway, while you were working on stuff. I was joking on April 1st is I was going to make a big announcement that it was called the Crypto Economy Network. And I was going, switching everything back to the Crypto Economy.
When did you release episode one of that? Do you remember?
March 14th to 2018.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was short, just after my birthday. And I was like, I'm going to do this. I sat on this idea for like 4 years.
4 years, imposter syndrome. Like, well, what was keeping you from like doing that?
Procrastination, yeah. Wanting it to be right before I started, like perfect before I started, and wanting to rely on my brother and my brother wanting to rely on me. Like we just wanted somebody else to do the organization and like committing to like getting it done. So it was just like, we talked about doing this. Like we actually have like four lost episodes of a podcast that my brother and I started back in like 2015 or 2016, mm-hmm. I think. In fact, I probably have them somewhere, like the 32 terabytes or so on this ridiculous machine next to me. I'm certain I didn't delete it. I don't delete anything. But twice actually, we attempted to start a show. And I attempted to start a show, and I think it was just like really what got me to finally do it was that I was mad at myself for those 4 years for not doing it. And then we made it through the 2017 hype cycle, mm-hmm. and I was watching the price and everything unfold, and it was like exciting. And I was like, man, this has been a wild hype cycle. You know, this is so much bigger and like a different level than 2013 and stuff. And then I was looking at it, and then I was seeing, you know, the Plan B podcast, which I loved, which I think it ended somewhere around 2018, actually. And Pierre and Bitstein's show. I loved back then the Bitcoin Knowledge podcast and all this stuff. And I looked at it and I realized that sometime towards the end of 2017, 2018, I just realized I missed it again. I missed it again. Like there was a hype cycle in which there's like barely any podcasts to listen to. There's like four.
Yeah.
I've had this idea for 4 years and I just missed a whole cycle of an opportunity to actually set my, to actually have some sort of position here and have a network and have, and teach to explain stuff, you know, that I, like things that I know I could do and that like I could be valuable at. I just missed a massive opportunity. I let an entire cycle go by without doing anything. I am in no better position than I was 4 years ago. And I was so furious with myself. I was like, it's over. The 2017 bubble's over. We got, it's going to be 4 years again, you know? And then it's after my birthday, I was like, I'm old now. you know, I was just like, what the hell am I waiting for? This is ridiculous. And then the first day on the show, I was still a internet technician at the time. And I came home and just sat down to bed. And like two days prior or something, I finally shut down League of Legends. And I was like, I'm done with this stupid game that was consuming my life. And I sat down on the bed and I read the first read into my iPhone, sitting on the bed like this, like reading it on my iPad and talking into my iPhone. And I was just like, screw it. And I just published it. And like four people listened to it. And I was like, all right. And did it the next day, like six people listened to it. You know, it's just like, and it just kind of kept creeping up and I just kept doing it. And a couple years later, it was a show, you know?
So I remember it must have been around 2019 and I tweeted something because I was reading all the stuff. I was reading all the articles because they'd really started dropping around 18, 19. You know, we were getting, we had Bitcoin Standard out. We had Andy's book out, Jan's book out. And then the articles started coming. Breedlove was dropping articles. GG was on fire. It was such a golden time. And I was reading this stuff, ripping through it, and I couldn't get anybody else to listen to me. And I'm like, you know what? I'm standing here reading this stuff anyway. Why don't I just read it out and just record it? So I tweeted that. And like Breedlove actually just said, oh, I'd be really interested to know what kind of articles you're in, you'd be reading and which ones you'd concentrate on first and what topics and this, that, and the other thing. Whoop. And then some other dude, I don't know who it was now, is like, man, like my guy, Crypto Economy got you. He's already doing that. I'm like, what? Awesome. Like, wait. And then I found your show and I'm like, yes, yes, yes. And I just started downloading all these episodes. And yeah, it's been really critical. It saved me doing it. So thank you. But that kept me procrastinating and my, you know, and fighting my own imposter syndrome, which I didn't overcome until end of January 2020, where I just released a released an episode. I had a recorded conversation that I'd done with Didi Tahutu. And I'd done that interview for a different thing, for a homeschooling conference, because he and I were introduced to each other. We were both big homeschoolers traveling with, he was traveling with his kids. He's the guy, he's the Dutch guy that sold everything and bought Bitcoin and took his kids out of school. The Business Insider.
I knew I recognized the name and I was like, what? Right. Well, who is that? Yeah.
So that's an epic first interview. I had that already recorded and I'm like, well, you got the work. That's a Bitcoin podcast episode right there. And it was 45 minutes long, an hour long. I'm like, fuck it. Like, anchor, bang, ship, gone. I woke up the next morning, 200 people downloaded an episode and listened to the episode.
Whoa! That's nuts!
Yeah.
Nice. Dude, it took me like 6 months to get to 200 people.
But it was 2020, man. It was different time. And I was standing on the shoulders.
That's true. I was in the bear market was was in full swing when I did mine. So,
and from that point on, you know, all excuses smashed, and you know, people were getting a lot out of it. And then you came on, and I remember you talking about you being a massive gamer, and like the amount of the time that was eating up in your day.
Time, man. Time is so, so scarce. Like, it's crazy now that, like, I don't do any of that anymore. I barely even watch movies. Like, as someone who was in film school, like, I would watch movies like it was a job. I mean, in fact, just kind of like as a casual joke thing, my best friend, since we were like 4 years old, he ended up doing film as well. Started with something else and then went back to school for film, and did it like 2 years behind me or something. But we were doing it at the same time for like a year or two, and we had a competition of like how many movies have you watched this year, like from this point to this point. And I think I averaged like 1.5 a day.
Wow.
Or something. Like I watched like 400 or something, or like 1.2 or something like a day. But I watched more than one a day, like throughout that year. And to make it known that I wasn't like totally just a degen that just sat around watching movies all the time, is I did watch a lot of movies in class. You know, we would do film analysis and we would watch a film. The workshop classes were literally, we would go to the theater in the school and we would watch a film. And then the Thursday class, in response to that, would be a breakdown, like scene breakdowns and structure arc breakdowns in every scene versus the arcs and the big overall arching story. So it wasn't just like I was every single day, I was just like movie, 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 movie. There were some of it was homework. So, but still, that was a lot of movies. But I don't have time for, I was talking to him yesterday and we were joking about that because he watched like one movie in like the last 2 months. And I don't know when the last time I like literally sat down and watched a movie. Like I'll watch a TV show or something while I'm usually doing something else, you know, and it's usually like a Brooklyn Nine-Nine or something stupid that you don't have to pay attention to really. But time is so scarce, man. I don't know how I functioned with the hours that I spent on League of Legends and movies and all of that stuff. Like, I feel like I have no time, and all I do is work, you know? It's wild. It's wild. I guess it's just getting old. You know, your perspective on all that stuff changes.
Well, there was a nice read as well you did at the beginning of this year. You read my article. Thank you very much. Really enjoyed it.
That was a good one.
Dropping that one. And then you guys take after that. That was great. That was about usury, and I was going through and using the book Red Symphony as the basis of that argument. But the one before that was the one you do each year on 1st of Jan or 3rd of Jan, I can't remember, is the Ross Stevens letter that he writes. And from that episode, thank you for reading that, I've taken a little tidbit of that into my everyday life, because like many other people,
really,
I have a to-do list, which I sit down and write every morning, and I've always got it with me, a little booklet, like all of these tasks I've got to complete that day. And it's overwhelming. And sometimes you just look at it and you're like, how much Fiat fuckery has taken up my time, you know, all of this admin that I've got to do, this bureaucratic bullshit just to freaking get access to some money. I've still got some investments, you know, the freaking drill. But like, and as you explained, well, reading as Ross explained, and as you explained afterwards in your guys take, I get to do list. So every morning I write down at the top of that, I get to do, and then I make the list. Yeah. And that mental mind shift has made such a difference.
It's big. Yeah. It's fascinating how much your mental framing guides everything. Like, you can literally change. It really is so potent. It is so potent. And I loved that part of that piece. That was one of the best things. Usually I'm looking for like the Bitcoin thing or the Austrian economic thing in the article or whatever. But sometimes it's just like how to frame whether or not you should be framing something in the positive or the negative, you know? And the I get to is so crazy because it, especially like in my context, is like when I say I get to, my I get to is all, and I don't do it well enough. I don't remember this, but like once every 2 weeks, and then be like, shut up, quit. It's when I'm like in the worst of my bad moods and I'm like drowning and stuff, and I'm just like, shut up. You don't have real problems, you know? You have problems that other people wish they had, you know? And I'll remember that I get to thing. And I appreciate you bringing it up because I hadn't thought about it in the last couple of days and I've been feeling overwhelmed. But they're all relevant to the fact that I'm getting to run my own business and I'm getting to choose what projects I want to do. And I don't have a boss. Like I don't have somebody telling me what to do, you know? And like I kind of have an ultimate optionality in, you know, what I choose to do and how I choose to spend my time. And those are good problems to have, you know?
You take on a lot of stuff and you don't have time to do it, but it's your decision, right? You get to do it. And the way I was thinking, the way I thought about it too, like it made a big difference for me. It's sometimes I'd find myself like getting pulled from pillar to post because I've got a kid over here at a birthday party, a kid over there needs to do football, a kid over here needs to, get picked up and taken to horse riding or whatever else. And some days I might have found myself driving around for an hour and a half from like point A to B to C back to A just to get in time, just to get back to B. And it used to drive me nuts. I'm like, damn, I'm spending a lot of time doing this stuff. But at the same time, it's like, I get to do this. I get to spend the 20 minutes in the car with my daughter while she's singing along to Taylor Swift. And, it's just me and her in the car. I get to take my son to his footballers. I'm not chained to a fucking desk. Like that was the mind shift for me that really helped because, and then when you apply it to just like admin as well, like hey, I was just going through filling out forms and then scanning it and blah, 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 and getting it back. And it's like, well, I get to do this. Like you say, it's a pain in the ass and I wish it didn't have to be, but somehow I am in a position whereby, I do have access to that financial asset. And, as much as I'm trying to move it all out of one thing and into you know what thing, it's been a slow journey because of the iron curtain that gets put around some legacy investments, which is a funny thing. I remember you on a podcast actually, it might have been on the Swan podcast back in 2020 where we had the crash, the COVID crash. And you were like, I was scrambling around in the back of sofas and this, that, and the other thing. And then you found some old retirement fund. You're like, holy shit, holy shit. How did I forget about this one?
It was a Fidelity account. It was a Fidelity account from the technician job. And you know, I'd done like tiny contributions, but the company had matched them, you know, and I had never touched it, never even thought about it. But it crashed from 6,000 to like 30 to 3. It was like, I think it even got down to like 2,700 or something. And it was so aggressive. I remember like it'd been a while since we'd had like an aggressive candle like that. Like it was like 2 to 3 days, 50% plus drop. Like that was insane. I remember thinking the first thing that hit was like really broken. Like what? Something happened. You know, something has to explain this candle. And I went hunting. Like the first thing, literally the first thing I typed in was SHA-256 vulnerability. Like SHA-256 broken in Google. And I was just like, this has to be detrimental. Like this has to be fundamental if this is like this serious of a drop. And I went scouring. I was like, there's no bug, there's no CVE report, there's no like nodes are down. Like I checked the block explorer I was using and my node, and you know, I was just like, what went wrong? What happened? And I could find nothing. There was nothing wrong. And I was like, oh my God, this is the greatest opportunity of my like I've had this opportunity like 6 years. And I just started to lose my mind. And I remember because we had this big like bookshelf with these like little square cubbies in it. And in the bottom two rows of this big wide bookshelf were these little file folder cubby, like kind of like vertical drawer things that were just like from Target, you know, like their fold up things, but they look really clean. And my wife does like really good design stuff for that. And it wasn't really like super organized. And I was literally just taking every single one of them and then laying out anything that I thought was like financially relevant and starting to sort it out. And my wife came home. She was at work at the time. And I've been doing this for like 4 hours. And my wife came home and the whole living room. It's just like one of those ridiculous scenes in a movie where you're like, nobody just lays all papers out like that. Like that never happens, you know? And you're just, I'm like drawing red lines and I got the thread. And so it's like, this started at this date. But I literally spread the whole thing. I was like, oh my God, Bitcoin is down like 60% right now. And there's got to be some money around here somewhere. I found a Fidelity account and I was like losing my mind. And it took like, we also sold the car. it took 2 weeks. So I think it was like at 5,000 or something. It was already like going back up. But I was like, we have we haven't driven that BMW in 2 months. We need to just sell it. We just need to get rid of it. And we didn't get much for it, but it all turned into Bitcoin. So I was like panic dumping anything fiat to, I haven't had that strong of a buy itch. And since then, that was like the peak. That was the epic of like, this is the greatest. This is the last time that this opportunity is going to be here. And I got to take advantage of it. Very happy I did. I ended up with a couple of Bitcoin.
It's because I was doing exactly the same. I was like going through old emails, trying to figure out what did I open up when I was, you know, back in my mid-20s. I'm sure maybe one of those things is coming to retirement. Like, you know, I might be able to cash it out. No, I can't cash them out until 2027. What's the maximum partial surrender? Well, okay, what's the other things I can? And I'm emailing like all of the different financial advisors that corralled me into these different things. And so it's nice to know that there was somebody out there doing the same thing at that time.
That was epic. That was a hell of a crash, man.
Yeah, man. Well, listen, those special times, 2018 to 2020, especially on Bitcoin Twitter. I don't know that we'll ever see those times again. It's always evolving. It's certainly a different place now as well. And we've evolved so much. Like, you know, if you go back and listen to old episodes that we've done in the past, like, wow, like it's night and day.
I was a baby.
Yeah.
I was a baby. I didn't know what I was talking about at the beginning of this show. Six years.
Yeah. Where are we going to be in the next 6 years, man?
6 years. I've been doing this for 6 years. I don't think I had a job this long, except for construction. But that was because it wasn't like I was constantly in and out of that one. Like, construction is something you can do for 2 months and then go back and stop and go back. I don't think I've done anything this long, this consistently.
There's nothing as intellectually stimulating, mate. Like that's the thing. That's what keeps us coming back. That's what keeps our nose to the proverbial grindstone. It doesn't even feel like work, you know? You and I right now are working. We're having a conversation. We're hanging out. So like just catching up with an old friend, and I just hit record. And like, that's it. Yep. Yes.
And you know, I'd be doing this anyway. That's like the big thing, is that I would still be like, I wouldn't be as systematic about it. And I wouldn't be as like, I need to do it this way or have this out, but I'd still just be doing this stuff, you know, like I would still have the, like, no matter what I end up doing, I'll still just do the podcast to the degree that I can do it, you know? Like, I don't think I'm not 100% sure it will ever die, if, as long as I just have some time to sit down and read some stuff.
Yeah, as long as people are happy to write articles or books about Bitcoin, which there seems to be a shit ton of people because my pile of shame just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Oh,
And
my
imagine
God.
what yours is like.
The backlog. The backlog. Let's not talk about the backlog.
All right, I'm going to hit you the final question. If you had one last orange peel left to give to somebody, who would you give that to and why?
One orange pill. Let's see. A lot of it's funny how many people are kind of orange pilled now. Or they've at least very much changed their perspective on it, such that like they're either Bitcoin supporters or they're Bitcoin adjacent, you know? But it might be Dave Chappelle. Dave Chappelle. I would love to hear, he has an extremely unique way of thinking about things, and comedy is such a powerful tool. I would love to hear his perspective when he grasped what fiat is. I would love to hear that stand up. I would love to see him put his mental frame on that problem and then make the jokes. The edgy as it gets to jokes to basically break down the assumptions of, sure, the state's supposed to be in charge of money. Sure, we're supposed to print and counterfeit trillions of dollars every year. I think he could just take that and make absolute gold. And he would probably, in doing so, change more people's perspective about what fiat is than maybe anybody else, you know?
I mean,
it might be Dave Chappelle.
We've got the classic George Carlin sketch, right? But it needs a revamp.
That's exactly it. We need a Dave Chappelle George Carlin sketch.
Yes.
That's exactly right. Yes, that's my thinking. You put it in the right context. Is that
right.
George Carlin thing that I'm
so? Any plebs listening, get us in touch with Dave Chappelle. However you can do it. I know that there's a lot of resourceful plebs out there that listen in, and Guy's gonna orange pill him. And then we'll have the Christmas special of Dave Chappelle absolutely outing the fiat system.
I'm ready.
All right. That's what we're going to manifest, Guy. So the next time we get on the show, we're going to be discussing the Dave Chappelle Christmas special.
Sounds
right?
good.
All
right.
Good.
Put it on the
Whenever
schedule.
That is.
You have your people talk to my people.
Okay. All right, brother. Well, have a great day ahead. And if people want to reach out in any way, what's the best way to get hold of the Guy Swan?
Hell yeah. You can find me on Noster, The Guy Swan, Twitter, The Guy Swan. I still try to answer my DMs. I'm not on Twitter that much anymore, but I do still communicate with people. I treat it like a messaging app now. So you can still DM me and I will probably get it. Of course you can just check out the show. But also if you want to just jump on Keet and join a bunch of the rooms there, I'm in a lot of rooms on Keet. So you can probably find me up there and tag me in a conversation in the pair community room or the whatever. So those are the places that I spend my time for communication. So
cool.
Yeah, hit me up, check out the show, Bitcoin Audible. AI and chain, pair report, all that good stuff.
Love it. Thanks for coming on, brother. Yeah. Catch you next time.
Yeah, dude. Good hanging out. Later, man.